Yes, we're here. This is Stefan.
Jared.
This is James.
All right, we're in the same room
because we have used your fine donations to develop teleportation devices that defy the will of the gods. So I will, in fact, not be asking for donations remotely. I'll be showing up in your bedroom. You may not recognize me because I will be dressed as Ronald McDonald or the clown from It, depending on whether you've donated or not before. So freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Now, we are good friends, and we try to help each other make good decisions.
Mm.
But I think it's fairly safe to say, this is on me. I did not help you guys make a good decision yesterday. In fact, I strongly encourage us to make what is possibly one of the worst artistic decisions I've ever made, which is to go and see the movie Homestead.
That's fairly put.
Is it fair? I grovel in sublime levels of knee-bending apology for this, and we will talk about the why. This is from Angel Studios, and they have a pretty uneven track record for me. And I've seen now 4 of their films. 2 of them were good, and 1 of them was forgettable. And this one was bad.
Mm.
And on so many levels, it troubled me.
Now, I should correct that, because I did put it on you to say you took us to go see Homestead. But no, the reality is, I've seen people on Twitter, I've seen people like, have you seen Homestead? And in retrospect, I get what it was. It was product placement. Someone was
organic marketing, maybe.
Oh, no, it wasn't organic. In my opinion, not organic at all.
Right.
Whoever was paid to promote it and talk about it and bring it up. And I understand why, because they weren't going to get the organic love. But initially, I'm like, oh, yeah, I got to go see that.
Well, if so, for me, it was right out of my novel, The Present. People should get that at freedomain.com/books, which is about the collapse of a civilization. Mine is more of a slow motion economic collapse, and theirs is nukes in the harbor.
Well, no, and The Present is like a good, hearty, like grounded, real philosophical take on this kind of a situation. I was looking for, okay, what's more of a practical take? Like, show me the cool stuff. How do I filter the water? How do I do this? Or what are the relationship problems I'm going to come across in this situation that I'm not going to hear about from you because you're dealing with the heart and soul of things.
Yeah, yeah.
But what's the more surface level stuff I need to think about, negotiate, and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I was pretty excited.
Well, and for men in particular, fortress stuff is cool.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because we evolved with this. Like, I write about this in my novel, The Future, right? Which is like, we have enough food for winter, our neighbors don't, and their bodies are going to have to litter the backyard until we can bury them in the spring, right? Because we can't let them in. Like, this fortress stuff, this is why. So to me, it speaks to something really primal, which is, I've thought ahead. I've planned ahead, this grasshopper and the ant stuff. I've thought ahead. I've planned ahead. I'm really sorry that you haven't. And there was this tension, right?
Yeah.
And this tension between the men saying, we have to keep them out,
yep,
and all the women saying, oh, we have to let them in because feelings.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, this is going to be really, I mean, that's an interesting tension or whatever it is, right? So,
yeah. And even that, like, could have been, that could have been really great for a really great foundation for a story, because that is where we live now.
And I want to see that conversation too,
yeah,
but it needs to go completely different than it did in that movie.
Oh.
Shall we say spoilers? Obviously, you know.
The whole movie's a spoiler.
Yeah.
So, yes, there will be spoilers in this. I, you know, if you like to analyze art, it's not a bad movie to see. Like, we've got some really good conversations out of it.
I was going to say, yes, it did cross a point to where it was so obscene, it was humorous.
Yes.
You know?
So, the basic story is there is, you guys said it was China, that there's this nuclear bomb and a fishing boat, a bunch of nuclear weaponry or whatever, and a fishing boat off Los Angeles.
They were South Americans because they were speaking Spanish, but you could see like Asian writing all over the stuff. And he's like, think about your familia. And then the implication to me was that they were like paid to sacrifice themselves.
Or their family was going to get killed if they didn't.
Or that.
Something like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Right? Oh, you made a vow or something like that. Mm-hmm. So they're these two Polynesian looking guys speaking Spanish. And they detonate this bomb off the coast. And then this does some daisy chain thing that I didn't quite follow.
Okay, but no, but then the Russians.
Oh, I thought the Russians were being blamed for the first nuke.
No. It was the
hacking the cyber.
Yeah,
that's a cyber attack on the grid.
We're under cyber attack, and like you said, a daisy chain. First, it's a nuke, and then something else goes on, and eventually, like, cohesion in society breaks down, and California and Utah are fighting, and that kind of stuff. To me, the movie was the right wing's version of Civil War in its obscenity of how much they got it wrong.
Go on. Let's hear about how they got it wrong.
Man,
they couldn't do a full nuke thing.
Okay.
Because then everyone's dead, right? Or has 9 heads and like there's no surviving. If there's like, you know, 50 nukes dropped on America, there's no surviving, right? I mean, otherwise people wouldn't build bunkers, right? Yeah. So they couldn't do a full nuke scenario. So they had to do, you can't just have the power grid hack because there's no drama in that. Like the mushroom cloud, for me, it triggers like Cold War shit from my childhood, right? So,
right?
So they have to have the mushroom cloud and the, why is the sky so weird, man? Chemtrails. So they had to have
Don't breathe the air.
For the drama. Yeah, don't breathe the air. Is that a thing?
It was in the movie. I don't know.
Do you inhale?
It could be. Yeah, it absolutely could
you
be.
You inhale the...
No, you can have a dirty bomb.
Well, yeah. I thought it was... I was not sure about it. And then when they got into the Tesla,
there was a biometric.
It was like a biohazard.
You're right. I didn't catch that. The Tesla
it was like a biohazard button. This is interesting.
Right.
So is this like a nuclear? Is it like a bioweapon? Like what's going on?
But then you bring the dog in who's been inhaling and exhaling apparently into the car. It's totally fine.
Yeah.
Well, no, the car, the dog. Oh, no, you're right. Yeah. Because he's. Yeah.
You can't breathe it, but bring the dog in who's breathed it. Anyway, that's neither.
One of the things that it would harm you individually, because I think the case to be made is like it's either radioactive particles themselves or particles that have been made radioactive by the explosion, and therefore you're bringing in this.
But wouldn't the
body.
Dog breathe out some? Anyway, so I didn't know that was a thing. That I don't mind being schooled and educated. I'm sure they did some research that way.
I don't know if it's a thing outside of the movie at all.
Right, right.
But it was there.
So they had to have the bomb for the drama, and everyone's got to flee, right? And the lights are flickering is not the most dramatic way to start a movie, right? And they flee, and I thought at the beginning, I don't know who was the actress who played the mom at the beginning, but she was in the car fighting her panic.
Yeah.
Such good acting for me. Like, that hit my heart hard.
The first 5 minutes they had, I'm like, finally, we have a studio that gets it. Like, this is going to be a right-wing studio, you know? And... Yeah.
And then it kind of got haywire from then. Yeah. So that family flees, and then there was the interracial family, the tough guy and the tough woman, right? The white guy, she's black. They were both ex-military, and he was like stone-faced, golem-headed, tough guy. And he had the look, and I thought he acted it very well and all of that. Like, I really believe that he was that kind of guy.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if the actor was ex-military, because he had that in his bones, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, some actors are just born to play cops, and this guy was just born to play soldier of fortune guy.
Like the army fella out of Full Metal Jacket.
And yeah. Well, he was that guy.
He wasn't actually an actor, yeah. Totally fair.
And then they have this, the number of plot threads that were left hanging was annoying. Now, I try not to be too OCD about plot threads, but there's this girl, and she has a vision. She draws a tree that looks vaguely like a nuclear bomb, and he holds it up, and it looks like, and she drew this an hour before. So she's got some prognostication thing. Does that ever come up again?
Oh, no, it does. Towards the end, so you can go keep watching the series.
No, after the end. That's after the end.
Yeah.
That's an advertisement, yeah.
Yeah, so the advertisement for the series. So to me, if you're going to set up psychic kid who knows bombs are coming, it's got to pay off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't set me up. There's an old thing from Chekhov, the Russian playwright. He said, look, if you have a dining room,
right,
and on the mantelpiece is a gun, it has to be used before the end of the show. You can't just have a gun on the mantelpiece and not have it go anywhere. Like, and so... they were setting up all of this stuff. I'm thinking, wow, they're really got the balls in the air here. Apparently, it's really easy to be a juggler if you just let things fall. You know, just don't. So that kind of, because that showed up nowhere again. And I'm not really sure what the point was of kid draws ambiguous bomb tree an hour before, which nobody can figure out what it is. Like, what does that even mean? Did she get a vision? Is God trying to save them? Well, wouldn't he send them something a bit more clear? Like, leave the house. A bomb is coming, as opposed to this tree could vaguely be. Anyway, so. That kind of drove me.
Well, and it does fit the theme of women are magical and have a better connection to God than men.
Oh, the blasphemy.
Yeah.
The blasphemy. We'll get into the whole, because towards the end, of course, it's gynocentricity. Gynocentricity, the women have totally taken over.
Yeah.
Because the women have a special relationship with God, don't you know?
And the women, they get God. They understand God. And all that men can do is trust the women, right? Yeah. The woman says, I believe, I trust God. And the man says, I trust you. Such blasphemy, such an inversion of the man as the head of the household of Christianity. Absolute female worship, death of modern Christianity, absolute garbage.
Or even if you, let's say you leave that outside of it, it's an inversion on like the equality of men and women. Because now just men deferring to women's magical relationship with God.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the marriages. So James is still single, ladies. Jared is married recently and very happy.
It is wonderful. Do it.
I have married 22
this January.
Thanks, Mom.
I only know because I heard last night.
Well, I was listening, Steph.
Oh, Jesus.
No, I appreciate that.
I can't help but be an apple polisher. It's just my nature.
Edit this part out. Okay. So none of the marriages were good. There was this constant thing where the men were trying to be sensible and the women got upset at them. Always. Like the guys got a whole, like, so basically there's a bunch of people who flee the cities and they get to the homestead. The homestead is this giant half bulbous Mediterranean castle on a hill in the Rockies where they don't maintain the fencing. Apparently it's just not important.
Yeah.
Don't maintain the fencing, but people got to stay out. So they get to this homestead and the first quarter of the movie is them getting to the homestead, right? The drama of driving through and getting gas, and there's an electric car. Why did you get an electric car? Yeah. Like, she gets mad at her husband. Why did you get an electric car? It's like, why didn't you know that there was going to be a nuclear incident and then the Russians were going to hack the grid? And like, come on, man. Yeah. Like, how about pulling together a little bit in a crisis, you know?
I'm sorry we don't have a magical girl in our house.
I'm sorry the bomb tree didn't tell me in the 1 hour before it happened to sell the car, the electric car, and get And why is it, anyway, crazy.
Well, and so, the electric car that also happened to have the biohazard.
That saved their life. Yeah. How dare you buy something that saved our life? Yeah. So all that happened was the men were trying to be sensible and rational, and the women were just upset about it, right? So there's the silver-haired guy, the guy my daughter referred to as Bull. By the way, why is he not in this movie review? I remember for much of the movie, of the movie, I did see her in the movie theater.
No. This is where I admire her wisdom.
She fled.
She was like, I'm done. I'm cashing out.
So there was an interesting synchronicity between the movie and the audience, because the movie characters were fleeing the irradiated bomb in the harbor, and my daughter was fleeing the irradiated bomb of the movie. So there was really quite a lot of refugees occurring. And so she went to the washroom. She was gone an alarmingly long time. Like, what are you, 58 with a phone? Anyway, that's another story that has nothing to do with anyone at the table. And then she just came back and she said, is it okay if I don't return? I'm like, absolutely. Don't worry about it. But she doesn't even mind a bad movie if you can make fun of it. Mm-hmm. But this was appalling to her. And again, out of the mouth of babes, right? The wisdom of the young. So this is why she declined to participate. And she would just only be able to talk about it. So before she left. So the married couples, so the guy, the silverhead guy, has on the wall the chalkboard, right?
And he's the patriarch. He's the one who is competent enough to build this megalith mansion, cellar, all this stuff, like all this big prepper thing. But
and he's got the greenhouse. He's got here's the people, here's the calories. He's got the math, right? He's got the math.
Yeah.
And he's like, and then there's a problem with the grain. The grain gets broken into some parent. And this is, of course, the big nightmare.
The rats, yeah.
Like, I felt my bladder squeeze when I saw that scene, ancestral memories. rats getting in. If the rats get into the grain, you're dead.
Yeah.
Like, this is why the domesticated cats because you eat it, you die. You don't eat it, you starve.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, God. Right? So anyway, he's got this whole chart on the wall about all the calories. And he's like, we can't make it. And his wife is just like, my God is bigger than math. Was it something like that?
No, that's it verbatim.
My God is bigger than your silly math. And it's like, there was this guy who turned out to be on like off his meds and crazy. And it's like, still not that crazy though.
Yeah.
Still not as crazy as the women who are like, we can bring everyone in because outside the gate, right? It's kind of funny, right? There's this gate to this whole compound, the homestead, when they keep it locked and all these refugees piling up who want stuff, right? Even friends of the guy inside, right?
Yeah.
But on the back, there are no gates whatsoever. There's no gates
And people just walk right, the fence is down. Remember the guys who walk over the fence and there's like a no trespassing, but so everyone apparently just waits at the gates and starves to death rather than go around the sign where you can get in with no problems. So anyway, I just found that strange but true. So the women are just, so the men are like, here's what we need to survive. And the women are like, no, because miracle, faith, and feelings. And it's like, and I that tension is interesting, right? And so on. But none of the marriages are happy, and none of the people, none of the men are respected. Can you think of one time when a man was respected?
Well, between
and deferred to. No, women to men.
No.
It's math.
Yeah.
God made math.
Yeah.
God made human beings so that you need a certain amount of calories in order to survive.
Yep.
How does feeling, you know, estrogen does not remake reality. Although I guess it does in the modern world. But that to me was just appalling. Like I had no sympathy for any of the married couples whatsoever. Now, one of the women was like, we have to let the refugees in because feelings, right?
Literally, they're calling, and these are like their local neighbors and friends who are at the gates that the men have counseled, like, we're not letting them in, not happening, okay? Huh? And then they literally call them the refugees.
Yeah.
And then they're literally letting the refugees in.
Well, there's a real contradiction in the morals, right? So do you remember at the beginning, the woman is leaving in the Tesla, or whatever, is it a Tesla? Some electric car, right?
It's some kind of electric car.
But it's not a Cybertruck, so I don't care. Because things are seriously cool. They appeal to my Lego brain. So she's leaving in the Tesla, and the Tesla is running out of power, right? And I was a bit jaw-dropped at this, but I thought it was very cool, and I thought this would really pay off, right? So she decides to steal a man's regular car, a man's gas car, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Catalytic? No.
It was like a minivan.
Internal combustion, something like that. Like that. So some guy's in, I guess he leaves his keys in the car, which is stupid, right? If you're fleeing and it's a like a lawless situation, you don't leave your keys in the car. Anyway, excuse me, for the convenience of the plot, he leaves his keys in the car. Hmm. So she sneaks her children
into
his car and steals his car, drives away from the car with him hanging off the window, screaming.
It's sorry.
Like, why not take him with you?
Oh, well,
maybe he would want to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
So he could be going to pick up his kids because it was a big car. So it wasn't just his car.
Yeah. And do you invite that conflict? No, you go.
So, but she's willing to kill the guy because I thought it's very easy when you're hanging onto the side of the car, you fall and you get driven over by the car and you die, right?
Yeah.
It's not like there are any hospitals that are functioning in this environment, right? So she's willing to kill a guy and steal his property and condemn him to death because now he's out in the middle of nowhere. Because this was a gas station or whatever it was in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So he's in the middle of nowhere. He's got no car. They did throw his wallet out of the window, if I remember rightly, or something like that, right? But regardless, it's not like his money or ID is going to do him any good, right? So she is willing to kill a guy and steal his car to save his family.
Save her family.
Sorry, save her family. Thank you for that correction. Yeah. to save her family, she's willing to kill a guy because she's driving with him hanging off the side. He's that desperate. Because he knows he's dead.
Yeah.
Right? He's dead. Who's going to take him? Right? He's got nothing. Right?
So he's only... He had like a wild look to him, unkempt hair, that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, they had to kind of say that, right? But she's basically, she's either going to kill him directly by driving over him, which is, I thought was going to happen, or he's just got nowhere to go. He's in the middle of nowhere and he's got no food, no water, nothing of value. And he's going to just die out there, right?
Yeah.
So she's willing to kill a guy to save her family, but later all the refugees have to come in. So she's willing to sacrifice other people to save her family, which I understand, that's genetic in-group preference, that's biology 101. She's willing to kill a guy to save her family directly, drive over him, leave him to starve, but she wants everyone else to come into the compound. Despite the fact that it's going to kill her family, this makes no sense.
Implicitly, because she supports the other woman's choice to do that. She's not the one that makes the decision, but she supports the other woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's not fighting with the other woman and saying, listen, I killed a guy to get my family here. I didn't do that so you could invite everyone in the known. I wouldn't even invite that guy into my van, his van that I stole.
His van.
And sorry, wasn't it, tell me if I may have this wrong. So the silver-haired guy, it was his wife. Who was driving out of the, who stole the van?
No. It was not the silver-haired guy's wife who stole the van.
It was his sister?
The sister. His sister. So the silver guy is the patriarch of, of the homestead. His wife is the matriarch, and she's the one that's like, let some refugees in. She's always on the homestead. She stays here, and throughout the whole movie, she never leaves. It's her sister that's coming in the Tesla.
Is it? Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, got it.
It was some relation.
But the sister is not saying, you cannot let, listen, I've got blood on my hands. I killed a guy to save my family. You can't let these refugees in because we don't have the food, right?
Yeah.
So that drove me just nuts, that contradiction. So let's move to the army couple, right? Mm-hmm. That they were two ex-military, right? So they have a son, they have two sons, and then the girl that they adopted, right?
Mm-hmm.
The girl who...
Some sort of foster situation. She has some kind of terrible history or something like that.
So they're two soldiers.
Yeah.
Apparently, although they're both soldiers, their son knows nothing about guns because he's only gone hunting once.
Yeah.
The guy is a soldier of fortune obsessed guy who is like still a hired security killer guy.
Yes.
But his son knows absolutely nothing about any kind of weaponry. So the son says, I want to go and guard the perimeter, right? Because I want to contribute, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the dad says, yeah. And the mom says,
No. Not my baby.
Absolutely not. It's all the other young men who have to go and risk their lives, but not my child. So again, your child should be kept safe from this, but mm-hmm. other people should suffer,
mm-hmm.
right? And I don't remember what her view was of the refugee situation, but I don't think she was super positive about it.
She, what I remember is one situation where the homestead owner's wife was going to the front gate with the food.
Yeah.
She was going to give food. It was one of the first times that happened. It happened several times. It was like the rotting food that they're going to throw away in the hand. Had to throw away.
Yeah, yeah.
And which, you know, the homestead owner is like, but actually, we can't throw any stuff or anything away, you know, but.
What you do, if with food that's going to go bad, sorry to interrupt, you eat it.
Yeah.
And maybe it makes you 5 pounds heavier, but you need that.
Sure.
Like your body is storing the food. You are a fridge, right? Sorry, I mean to look at you directly. I look in the mirror. You are a fridge, right? The reason we gain fat is so that we can safely store calories for when we need it later. Like, you remember that Scottish guy who lost like 200 pounds just by eating vitamins over 18 months because he's just eating his own ass every day, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Cannibalism. So the fact that the food is going bad does not mean you throw it out. It means you feed everyone up so they can store the calories in their waist or their butt or wherever, right? Boobs.
Yeah.
And then you eat it later, right? That's what the fat is for. But sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So what I recall... excuse me. Whatever.
Now, you know, if this was a movie, you'd be dead in the next scene, right? Oh, no. A character has coughed.
Yeah.
That must mean nobody coughs by accident.
And then I'd be like, and look at my hand. And I'd hide it from the
hide. Yeah, hide it. Yeah. And then you'd go out and do something heroic knowing you were going to die.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Clint Eastwood style. So go ahead.
Yeah.
All right. You will get to your point at some point.
Eventually, whether it's by hook or by crook. Oh, goodness. All right. Yeah, exactly.
We all leave the table. Yeah. So we're just going to put James in a bubble boy outfit, or maybe just put a condom over his head.
Oh, my God.
And this was the beginning of the pandemic movie.
Yeah. So I was going to say, I remember the army wife was like looking at her, was like, are you sure this is okay? But not like fighting her.
Yeah.
You know,
none of the females disagree.
Yeah.
It, with anyone except their husbands.
Yeah.
So she's like, not my boy. And it's like, but it's a military situation. Now, they should, of course, have trained their boy, right? The fact that it didn't is just for dramatic potential. So then there's this completely wildly unrealistic scene for me where the boy ends up shooting a guy.
Yeah.
Right? And now you say he's a boy. What is he, 17? You know, he's like, you know, you can legally join the army at 17, I think, in the States with parental permission. I think 18 without.
Mm-hmm.
So he's of army age. He's got army parents and so on. So... but they send him up to guard the perimeter with another guy who knows nothing.
Mm-hmm. Another young man.
Who knows nothing.
Yeah.
Who knows so little that the guy who's only gone hunting once, which means he may have shot a gun once or twice.
He's
the one with the gun. So they send two completely inexperienced people to guard the perimeter, even though they're military. That makes absolutely no sense. They would send someone experienced up at least for the first couple of times, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that you don't have the kid doing this, right? So anyway, they completely retarded, send two complete noobs up there with, by the way, a malfunctioning
megaphone,
say, well, the batteries are low, man. It's like, but they're military. You would check that first.
You prepare for that. Yeah.
Because that's essential, because you need to warn people to get off your property. So they send two complete noobs up with a non-functioning megaphone.
Yep.
Which is completely like the military, competent military people would never let that happen, like in a million years, right? And then there's these two chunky guys come up, and one of them, they're trying to figure out what's glinting up on the hill, right? And you said it's obviously a blind. And what was it you called?
No, I said no, it's obviously a hunting blind.
Right.
Like, so you've got guys, they're
a berm, I think you called it.
Right. They're a berm and a hunting blind.
Yeah, whatever.
If you're out there in the woods, if you're out there hunting, ostensibly like these guys.
Nothing reflects in the woods.
Well, there's that, and you know what a fucking hunting berm is.
Right. These guys look like hunters.
Yeah.
Well-fed hunters. Confident hunters. Hunters with lots of winter ice.
They're definitely carbohydrate American.
Yeah, they are. So these guys come up, and they're trying to see what's glinting up there by looking through their rifle sight, which is, okay, if it is somebody who's up there with a gun, pointing a gun at them is the bad idea.
Well, here's the thing. Like, if I'm, let's say I am in that shoot, I look up, why am I looking through my scope? Okay, but let's say I am looking through my scope, because as a hunter or a man who knows guns, I'm aware that you point your gun when you're ready to blow whatever it is in front of it away.
You don't use it as a sight aid.
Yeah. And so, okay, let's say these guys are just, you know, incompetent or negligent, whatever. He's there for a good 2 or 3 minutes, pointing his gun up and using the scope and staring at this thing. A, you recognize it as a hunting blind. B, once you've got like reflections coming off, you're like, oh, that's binoculars. Someone's watching me. Or what you really do in your mind is you say like, oh, someone is pointing a gun at me.
Right.
Because you're right. It's the glint of the scope. So, and oh, I'm pointing a gun at them. Holy, you know, and right. You stop. You point down. You point away.
Right. Now, we don't know exactly how far these men were. And this, I know this sounds like detail-oriented, but for me, it's really, really important because logic of the story is really important because this was a pivotal moment, right?
Mm.
So why don't the men say, hello? Hello, anyone up there, right? The hunter guys.
One of them does yell at some point, like, whoa, what is that? Hello, because after they do the warning shot. From my recall, he does
okay,
yell.
So you would do that ahead of time, right?
You would do that ahead of time.
Hello, anyone up there?
Yes.
We come in peace, you know, because you've got weapons and it's a lawless society, right? So you would know that, right?
But it doesn't take far before you would really need the megaphone. Like I, from what I...
We were discussing this last night. So yeah, go over that logic.
From what I've shot at, it was my buddy's rain.
Mall. Sorry, just kidding.
No, I'm pretty sure that it was 100 yards and it was at least 80 yards what we were plinking. And even at that range, you've still got to account for bullet drop and all that. And
and that's in a wind-free environment.
Relatively
wind-free
because there's berms on the side, but it's still like, it's enough distance even there that you boom, and then you hear, you know, it's far enough away. You have
the sound takes a moment to come back.
Right. Yeah. Well, it takes a. And so to my mind, they could have been a couple hundred feet away, if that, and you would still.
You can call in a couple, you can yell in a couple of hundred feet.
If you focus, there's not a lot going on.
You cup your hands, you just give it, you would try, right?
Well, I think they could have, but even then, like from that distance, like you can yell. And if someone were yelling, to my mind, from what I was shooting at, I would have heard like, woo, woo, woo.
No, I get that, but at least you would establish that there was a human being up there.
Totally
they
agree.
Didn't even know what it was, right? So
totally
you yell
agree.
Something. You may not get the words, but you get, if two people cup their hands, because you had two guys up there, two guys cup their hands and yell down the hill, you're going to hear. Or if it's far enough that you can't possibly hear, the odds of that kid making that shot drop to zero, effectively.
Fair. Yeah.
So either they were close enough that you can yell, or they're so far that the only possible way you can make any kind of sound that reaches them is with a megaphone, in which case they won't probably even hear the words. They'll just hear, right?
Yeah.
If they're far enough away that yelling doesn't do any good, then the odds of a guy who's gone hunting once hitting a guy square in the chest from 1,000 yards. I mean, that's like lethal weapon. Like, one guy in 1,000 could have made that shot. Like, that's just crazy, right?
Right.
Yeah. And even though you were saying you got your laser sights, you got all this, that, and the
red dot
sight.
But you would have to account for bullet drop.
Bullet drop and wind. The trees were blowing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair. Now, that's a difficult shot for a brand noob. You know,
it's a virtually impossible shot. Come on, how much would you bet on a guy hitting a target this big from 1,000 feet
first
when
shot
he'd never shot that kind of gun before?
And the other
and
guy
he had almost no experience shooting, and the other guy didn't know what he was doing. Otherwise, he would have said, "You take the shot. You're the expert gun guy."
Now that I think about it, like when I was making those shots, my buddy was spotting for me, mm-hmm. and if when I missed, he'd be like, "You know, you're up. You know, right a little."
That's what they call. That's what they do for they call it.
So in
right?
this one, the kid hits him like first try.
First try.
There. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, they know they're seeing the berm. Mm-hmm. They're seeing the berm, and then he does a warning shot.
Yeah.
He does a shot over their heads. Right. So you're looking up, something's glinting. These guys are hunters, yeah. right? And then there's a warning shot. So why are they standing? Why is he standing there still squinting up at his gun?
For a minute, he's like pointing this gun.
Right. Even though there's a warning shot, they don't like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, we're hands sorry. Off weapons. We turn around, you know, we slowly, like, whatever. Or stop pointing the gun at the place where you've received a warning shot. Like, it was
really
contrived. It's contrived to traumatize the kid, right?
Yeah, the hunters were absolute idiots because when they got that warning shot, it was like, did someone get a mark or whatever? Like did someone shoot an animal? Like not they when they were saying shot, I don't remember like even them saying like hello up there, shouting.
It was all completely contrived.
Yeah.
And then the young man who shoots the hunter is traumatized for like the rest of the movie. Mm-hmm. However, the mom who steals the van, almost drives over the guy and leaves him to certain death, is totally fine.
Huh.
Totally fine. Come on. Wouldn't that haunt you a little? You stole a guy's car, condemned him to certain death, almost drove over him.
Well, and as you mentioned, nobody's got family somewhere else that they're like lamenting the absence of.
Yeah.
So the purpose of good art is not to say, here's how people should act. Or wouldn't it be cool if they did this? That's superhero garbage, right?
It's comic book Saturday morning.
It's to put, and you guys talked about this sort of comic book AI dialogue, and it was terrible.
Yeah.
So what you do is you say, okay, so these are people who've got, they're Christians, right? They're family oriented. They have grandparents, they have aunts, they have uncles, cousins, siblings, and so on, right? And they have fled a city. They have no idea what's happened to their extended family. They don't know if they're alive or dead. They can't call anyone. They can't get any information. And everyone's totally fine. And the only person, the only people they're worried about are the refugees, not what the heck has happened to my family. I mean, I would be tormented. I'm not even close to my family of origin, but I'd still be kind of tormented about, you know, what would happen to you guys? What would happen to my friends? What would happen to... I would not be like, well, I guess we're in this new world now. Let's flirt and let's have fun. And
if you are in that place, you don't give up. About the refugees.
Why would you care more about the refugees? Nobody ever said, what's happened to our grandparents? Nobody ever said, what's happened to my aunt and uncle? Nobody ever said, I can't believe we don't know what happened to my sister-in-law or anything, right? Nobody. I mean, they're willing to risk death to go back and get a dog, but they don't care about their extended family. There's not one little bit. And this young woman.
The daughter?
Oh, the daughter.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the daughter. Transplant kid. Okay, so she's just fun and chatty and flirty and happy. And let me tell you all about peach wine and let me do this and have you a little. And it's just like the entire world has just been destroyed.
Yeah.
All like she was more upset about not being asked out to the prom than the death of her entire civilization. Like that's schizo. That's beyond bizarre. That's like there's no humanity in any of the writing in any. And the actor should have been like, no, I'm not going to be like giggly, chatty tween girl.
Yeah,
because the entire world has just been destroyed. Remember at the beginning when I was really upset because I hadn't been asked to the prom? I went to the prom, but I hadn't been asked to the prom, and it was really upsetting for me. How is it that I'm so upset about not going to the prom, but then when the entire civilization gets destroyed and I'll never go to a prom again, I'm totally fine and chatty and happy and giggling?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That was pretty off-putting.
Oh, my God. I don't mean to root for radiation. I really feel that that's wrong. That is just, that feels fundamentally wrong to me. And I don't mean to, I hope that the refugees end up eating them. That also feels wrong. And I rebel against that morally, but I have a twinge because, oh my God. And the nobility of the woman who's just like, and the music, she lets the refugees in, right?
Right.
And whose wife was that?
That was the gray hair, the patriarch's wife. She's the matriarch.
She's the matriarch.
Of the homestead.
Oh, my gosh. So she lets all the refugees in, and they're all thankful to her, and she's walking, and she's so proud, and the music is swelling, and right?
Oh, that night, I realized I had the love in me all along, or something like that.
Yeah, because that's going to, you can eat love. Yeah. You can eat love. What you do is you open the chest and you fry up the heart. Anyway, so it like this virtue signaling. Well, it's just we're gonna find a way and blah blah blah. Right?
Okay, there's something about this. It really really pisses me off. It's so corrupting. Sorry, losing the thread a bit here. Okay, no. It's this virtue signal without any reference to some kind of objective, corrective, universal morality, moral system. Like, is there something more evil? More destructive? Like, I'm really getting to a place where like some Christianity without UPB is harmful.
Well, or at least without the Christian injunction that the man is the head of the household, right? Because this is Angela Merkel right there, right? We're going to let millions of people in. We'll find a way. We'll figure it out, right?
Right.
Which basically means that if there's a lot of conflict, the men are going to get called up. But anyway, so this, I'm heart swelling in love, and I'm taking the immediate gratification of everyone thanking me with no plan about how it's going to work. That is absolutely appalling. And she does this, so the silver-haired patriarch guy, who, by the way, this drives me crazy too. Just before we get to that. So he hires these Soldier of Fortune guys to come with machine guns to protect his entire homestead and his family. And he's like, well, I don't really want to use any violence. FEMA's going to come and everything's going to be just fine. Like, then why are you hiring all of these people with machine guns to protect your family if you think there's no one to protect them from?
That was more just a unrealism. That was another thing that was really disappointing about the movie. I'm like, okay, we're going to get that real right-wing, more conservative, more libertarian perspective. And these people were just like California conservatives. They were milquetoast. They were they were caricatures of a conservative.
So the patriarch guy, the guy's in charge of the homestead, who's right, he gets shot. And there's, you know, not particularly important, the scene, but he gets shot and he is in a coma for 10 days. Now, his wife knows for an absolute fact that he does not want these gates opened and the refugees let in because they've lost some significant portion of the grain to the rats or whatever got into the grain depository, right? Repository. So she knows for an absolute fact that he believes, and he's got the math. She doesn't argue with the math. She just says that math is unreal. And I can't believe that the other guy is considered crazy, the guy off his meds. This is more off the meds, right?
Yeah.
So she knows for an absolute fact that the man who funded, controlled, created, and is in charge of this whole homestead, he absolutely forbids her from letting the refugees in. He gets shot. He's in a coma. And that's when she does it. That is so jaw-droppingly a violation of the marital vow.
Yeah.
Not even the obey thing, just basic. Like, oh, he's almost dead? Great, I'll disobey him. I'll go against our marital vows. Like, that is so jaw-droppingly horrifying, I can't even tell you. I can't even tell you. That's worse than having an affair. Right? Can you? And what would you think of a woman?
It's their survival.
What would you think of a woman whose husband forbids her from having an affair, and then he's shot and in a coma, and she goes and bangs the guy?
Vile.
It's beyond vile.
Yeah.
Well, he could die because they didn't know he's coming back, right?
Yeah.
So now that my husband is shot and dying, I'm going to go let the refugees in. I'm jaw dropped. Like and then he wakes up and she's like, I trust you. Like, which means that his God is not God. His God is not math. God is not reality. His God is not survival. His God is his wife. The female worship that is in modern Christianity.
Yeah.
And of course it is in the modern left, right? Which is worships the single female.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. So this gynocentric female worship where women can do whatever the hell makes them feel good and men have to figure out how to make it work is absolutely astonishing. Oh, you don't have to have babies. We'll figure something out. You can all go work for the government. We can have massive debt. You can have endless abortions. Go ahead.
The fat nurse that finger wags at the military man for having his son in the front line and the son shooting the guy. She's like, oh, she just starts dressing him down. This murder, like wisdom pops up out of, you know, chunky woman. Yeah.
You're murdering the food. You're murdering other people by eating
the food. I remember now that the...
Pause on that for a second, because that woman who was like, she doesn't know the circumstances. The circumstances. She just straight up calls the kid to his face, a child. She straight up calls him a murderer with having no thought to the circumstances.
Right.
And then they're like,
get that kid out of here because the little psychic girl wanders in, right?
Yeah.
And it's like,
whose child is this?
If I had a kid who was, first of all, he was obeying orders. The kid who shot, like yes. the young man who shot. He phones his dad, the military guy, and says, there's a guy pointing a gun at me. He's not backing down. I fired a warning shot. He's still pointing his gun at me. And the father says, shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
With yells, with screams, his, over and over. Shoot.
With his take the shot. With his 20 plus years of military experience.
Yeah.
And then this absolute witch of a nurse calls the kid a murderer.
Yep.
Because she saw the guy die and she feels upset.
Mm.
She's upset. And why anyone blamed the kid is beyond me. He was taking orders from his military father with 20 years of experience who put him up there.
Yeah.
Right? And if somebody with 20 years of experience tells me what to do, I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, right. Yep.
I mean, if I'm going hunting and there's some guy who's got way more experience than I have, right? And he says, don't take the shot. I think there are people out there. I'm not going to take the shot.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Of course not.
No, absolutely.
He's got 20. I mean, my doctor has 20 years plus. I don't have any medical training. So if my doctor says do X, Y, and Z, well, then I'll Google and not do it because
well, no, it has a pandemic.
Right? Yeah, but anyway.
Talk with me about this, guys. Like, as a man, don't you have a bit of a martial spirit? Like, I hate the state. I hate, like, I would never join the military. But if I were in that situation, I understand the imperative of orders and following orders. You got a
he
bit
was
of
trying to save his son's life.
Yeah.
Because the son had fired a warning shot and some guy was still pointing a gun at him. A sniper rifle. Because it had a scope, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a hunting rifle, but with a kind of sniper scope, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So anybody who points a gun at you and does not retreat when you fire a warning shot, I assume is considered imminent danger. So he was yelling at the son to shoot because he thought the other guy was about to shoot his son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can understand that, but sorry, go ahead.
No, I totally agree. I'm saying there's an instinct for this. There's a masculine martial instinct for this kind of a situation.
Yeah.
You know, you follow the order. You continue.
Well, especially because your dad is an expert.
Yeah.
And your dad has literally been hired as a military.
Biological connection. Your dad is telling you to shoot.
Dad is telling you to shoot. Yeah. Your dad is telling you, do not waste all the time I spent raising you by getting shot, right?
Yep.
And also, if you get shot, I've got to go out and hunt the guy. That puts me at risk, which puts the rest of the family at risk.
And this guy's dying anyway. Either way, this guy's going down.
Yeah. If he shoots you, I'm going to have to go kill him anyway because I'm a soldier of fortune guy and it's a lawless society and we've gone back to Hatfield versus McCoys, right?
And nobody, I mean, this wouldn't happen in this movie, but nobody said, whoa, you're calling him a murderer? What if it was this? What if this was a little boy? My boy was on the table, bleeding out.
Right.
You know, I didn't tell. You know, if I didn't give the order to shoot, or he hesitated and he was shot, don't get out.
If this was your son,
is it your son? Yeah.
But that's sad because maybe that's the only that's the only argument that would work.
Maybe.
To make it personal rather than principle. But the fact that this woman, the nurse, and thank you for bringing that up.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that she said he's a murderer. This is straight up murder, but knowing nothing about the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that none of the men said, you are like absolutely awful. We're putting you outside the gates.
Right.
Seriously.
Right.
Like you are
a liability.
You have now traumatized this kid for life by now implanting the idea that he's a murderer in his head.
Yeah.
Right. Like you have bypassed the chain of command, parental authority. Right. You are now calling this kid a murderer, which is incredibly scarring psychologically. I mean, I think he was more scarred by the nurse than even shooting. Because if his dad had said, look, it was him or you, man.
Hmm? Yeah.
And the thing is, too. After the other guy flees, right? Yeah. After his friend gets shot, right? Why? So he's willing to run, but not with the warning shot. I mean, come on, right?
Yeah.
So they don't know if the guy was going to shoot the kid because he dies, right?
Yeah.
So the guy didn't live and say, no, we had no intention. I was just trying to figure out who was up there. Like, so there's absolutely no indication that the kid was not in mortal danger. There was every indication that he was in mortal danger. And this is, as far as I understand it, this is the rules engagement. If you're a cop and someone's pointing a gun at you, you shoot them.
And this is the example.
A warning shot is really nice. Sorry.
No, this is the example that supposedly right-wing conservative men, or a lot of them out there, will be giving their kids as like a decent moral value, moral system, moral movie. All right. And the men in this are eunuch cuck subs to the women.
Oh, it's awful.
And this is the example that a lot of quote-unquote right-wing conservative or non-leftist culture has for their children. This ain't an evil Hollywood movie. But I was counting out all of these, like, no, this is the same old Hollywood bullshit. Mm-hmm. So I remember where I was going with that, with the lack of skepticism for government. All right, so you have these operators, these All right. Yeah. Yeah. So you have these operators.
What are operators?
Okay. An operator is...
How can I forward your call?
It's a masculine geek term for like a real soldier. Like he's an operator. He knows what he's got.
A soldier of fortune guy. A top G with a gun.
Not soldier of fortune. Like they've done time in the U.S. military and yeah, they'll work private stuff. But like these are true super superior soldiers. Like these are like...
What do you mean they've not done time in the military, but they're soldiers?
No, they have done... That's what I'm saying. No, they've said specifically they have done
time
in the military. I mean, then they may work contract stuff, but they're also like bread and butter Americans and stuff.
Okay. Right? So the soldier of fortune stuff is just that they're not paid to be security guys after, but they're really experienced soldiers.
Oh, no, they are paid to do private security. These guys will go off like Blackwater. They'll go off there. Those are operators. Okay. A lot of them.
Yeah. All right.
So the call comes in on the radio as they're fleeing. All right. There's a nuke hit. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, so you're trying to figure out what's going on. Like, oh, Russia's hacked. Anybody like in that situation, any real man operating this, would be like, well, it's most likely our government more than anyone else. Like, they're going to laugh at the idea that
it's some external thing.
It was Russia, right? They're not going to take it as like, that's
false flag. Right.
You know, like, oh, kiss my, yeah. Like, it's just as likely, and especially in reality, like, it's just as likely to be our own fucking three-letter agencies.
Right. Yeah, so I was just kind of appalled at just the sentimentality and the syrupiness and all of this and the programming. Basically, the whole thing was, it's happy wife, happy life, but with guns.
Well, and the matriarch, the gray-haired man.
The patriarch.
Sorry, well, he was.
You might misgender Mr. Silverfox.
Yeah.
Ice blue eyes rule.
No, and him, this guy who's the one who was competent enough to go out into the marketplace and earn all the money to build this mega,
forethought enough to hire the machine gun and soldier for.
And he's
guys.
Like, FEMA's gonna come get us. Of course we're all gonna, like, no, but bullshit. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, this homestead situation is filled with people who are skeptical of our government or of government in general and know that it's like, from their perspective,
post-Appalachians, who's going to believe FEMA, right?
A necessary, they will call it at least a necessary evil.
Yeah.
You know, and like, no, there's just, it's unrealistic. Yeah. It's unrealistic.
Now, we know this for a simple biological evolutionary fact, that the only way that we evolved and survived, particularly as northern climate people, whether it's sort of the East Asians up in Siberia or the Europeans in Northern Europe, is that the only way that we survived is to not let the refugees in situations of emergency winter food rationing,
mm-hmm.
right? So for a simple fact, we evolved. And listen, the fact that the women have their hearts out there on their sleeves and care about the world, I think it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, the caring that is designed for 10 children, unfortunately, gets focused on often one or two children, which, you know, is one of the helicopter overmothering stuff. But the fact that women care about outsiders is great. I think it's really nice because it means that they can embrace people into the community. They can, you know, and they care about strangers down the road. They'll make them food and come visit them. I think that's lovely.
Yeah.
Outgroup preference, like not to the enemy tribe, obviously, but outgroup preference is part of how we build communities because, you know, men are a little bit solitary, right? We're a little bit of like basement futon and Xbox, right? So I get you to say, so the fact that the women have this empathy is great. I have no problem with it. And we know that I can't complain about anything to do with female nature because women plus men got us to the top of the food chain and the only brilliant species in the universe that's cognitively able to process concepts and have these kinds of conversations. This was a team effort from men and women. So I'm not going to fault any female instincts or any male instincts. But we do know for a simple fact, biologically, mathematically, calorie-wise, that the men had to override female sympathy in order for their families to survive in a time of scarcity.
Right.
And that is absolutely known. That is an evolutionary fact. It could not have gone any other way. Because when the women's sympathies overrode the male math, the family died off. The community died off. Right?
Yeah.
And so men saying we can't and women saying we want to, that the men had to override that. And that's great. And the fact that the women sometimes override the men and say, we need to be more community oriented. I mean, everyone who's married and his wife is part of a community says, so-and-so is having a birthday, so-and-so is having a christening, we have to remember such and such, we can't go over there without food. Like, they're very communal minded. And I think it's beautiful. It really is. Not the way my brain works, but it's great. And I defer to, my wife is very communal minded. You know, when we have people over, I mean, she works for days ahead of time. She gets everything ready. She's, we had people over at Christmas and it was like a beautiful time. And it wasn't, if I'd be like, hey, I had some potato chips like that, fucking luck, you know, like that's just not how I work, right? But so the community-minded stuff is great. and it needs to be overridden by male math. Mm-hmm. The male isolation side is great for hunting and war, but it needs to be overridden by female community area, right?
And that's virtue.
Like, we went out last night, and what did my wife say to me about my pants? Change them. Change them.
I wasn't present for that.
No, no, because I'm wearing my usual highfalutin gym shorts. And my wife was like, no, if it doesn't have belt loops, you're not leaving the house, right? She's right about that. She's right about that. So having the women override in terms of community is great. Having men override in terms of scarcity is essential, right? And it was all just one way. It was all just the women rule, and the men just have to figure it out. And that is female worship, and that is a blasphemy. That is a false idol. The worship of women rather than the worship of God and reality.
Amen. Well, no, a lot of this stuff, like, it is a recipe for the devil. Like, that's how the devil's going to get in and corrupt things.
Oh, have you seen that meme kind of like, God says there's only one rule, and then you see a picture of a woman naked with an apple in her mouth. So yes, the and men are programmed to defer to women because women historically have chosen who they mate with, and a lot of men didn't mate. So we're programmed to defer to women, and there's nothing wrong with that. Again, I can't complain about any evolution that got us to this table with this technology.
Mm-hmm.
But to defer to women relentlessly as a form of worship is provoking and producing the sin of vanity. And you saw this. So what happened was, the women are all like, a miracle will save us. A miracle will save us.
Yes.
I don't believe in math. I believe in miracles, right? And then there was this very contrived thing afterwards, which we don't really get into, about how they could survive even with the refugees, although we don't know that for sure, yeah. About how they grow potatoes by baking the bread at night in the greenhouse.
All these brilliant people didn't think of all these simple things, but the refugees knew how to solve that problem.
No, there's a guy who knows how to make fireplaces. Anyway, so this worship of the female, and you can really see this in Christian communities, and not just Christian, in the left as well, the worship of the female and the exoriation of the male, it is devilish. In the same way that you wouldn't want, obviously, some fascist regime where only the men are worshipped and the women are used as breeding cattle, right? The women are denigrated and the men are worshipped. You don't want that either. You need that balance. You are feverishly typing.
I'm taking notes. I just want to
go for it.
All right. So now you were making the case about how we as Europeans, the survival situation, yada, yada, yada. I was just kidding it. Like, this is also why we moralize. This is also why we
morality
spend time.
Morality is based on scarcity.
Well, no, that, yes, I agree with that. But though, this is also why in the times of relative peace, you shouldn't be doing this. You should stop smoking. You should eat this. You should go work out. You should blah, 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 blah. So that whenever the time comes, and you've made this case on the show before, it's like, brother, I spoke. I said something. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Where the hell were you? Sorry, you're at the end of the gate and you're not coming in, but I told you.
Mm-hmm.
I gave you plenty of heads up. Yep. I told you to buy Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Or not tell you to. Yeah. I made the case.
I said Bitcoin was quite important like 12 years ago. So
yeah. And it's like, and where the hell were you when I was speaking that? So I am now guilt-free. My conscience is completely clean and clear. And that's also, I would make the case why women in that time of relative peace, it's a virtue. It's a positive thing for them to be charitable and community and all that stuff. So that if that time arrives, and inevitably when it does, you say, hey, the reason you got fat on your sides right now was because of me back then.
Right.
So burn that to take care of your own ass.
Right. Also, handing out food to the refugees keeps the refugees at the gates.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than saying, there's nothing for you here.
Uh-huh.
You need to, and the guy said, remember the guy said, yes. What did the guy say to the bald guy?
Go find a farm.
Go find a farm and hold up. Wait this out. Like, waiting at the gates is not going to work. And the only reason they waited at the gates was they kept getting food. And that traps them in a situation that's completely unsustainable.
Yes.
Because they did talk about winter coming. I guess it was up in the Rockies or whatever. So the winter was going to come. What are they going to freeze to death at the state? Other thing. Minor continuity thing, but it drives me crazy. First of all, I had no idea how much time was passing until the end of the movie when it said 30 days. And the guy had been in a coma.
For 10.
So all of this happened in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Like, that's crazy, right? All of this stuff happening in 3 weeks. Like, my kids are still, well, I guess you can starve in 3 weeks, right? But here's the thing. And it, as a bald guy, this drives me a little crazy, right? And it's a minor point, but it's the detail that matters, right? So the guy's out in front, there's a guy with a shaved head, right? And a beard. So he's not got alopecia or he's not chemo or something, right? So he can grow hair and his head remains perfectly shaved throughout the entire movie.
throughout an entire month.
End of the world, but you know, you're going to get those clippers, keep them charged and run.
Well, we are starving to death, kids, but daddy's got to go and bick his head.
Right.
Like, that just makes, and nobody grew a beard. Like, oh, so they're all just, you know, we got to, I mean, it's the end of the world, man, but you got to stay shaved.
Yeah.
I mean, what isn't it kind of the first thing you wouldn't worry about?
And the ones that did have beards, particularly the military, again, they're all like super perfectly, like, you know,
perfectly shaved.
Like the third beard is coiffed. I know it's not that, that's not the word for
it. Nobody can come in except you, the barber. Okay, you can come in because we got to stay groomed, right?
There's a salon right next to the med bay.
Right.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
So that bothered me because an overemphasis on grooming in a post-apocalyptic scenario, it's a bit gynocentric as well. We got to stay pretty for the women. You know, it's like, what are you, like dancing boys in Afghanistan? Like, this is terrible.
Yeah.
It's just those little bits of continuity, right? It just drove me crazy. It means they really hadn't thought things through as far as how everything was going to. Those little details, it was really distracting for me because I'm looking at that guy like, why is he still as close-shaved? It's been, at least I thought it had been months, right?
Right.
So it turns out in some weird, maybe they were traveling near the speed of light, some weird time compression thing. It only been a couple of weeks, but those little details really mattered to me. It's like the guys in the Middle Ages with their perfectly trimmed hair and beards. It's like, you didn't have that back then, right? Mm-hmm. So it just, you know, give me the full-on bush beard, right? All right.
Yeah.
I think we covered most of everything here. I cleverly didn't take notes, but I think we got most of everything. No, I think we got most of everything. So,
well, I haven't thought here. I was like, if you were on the left and you saw the rise of the right and you wanted to capitalize on that, this is the movie you would make.
I think there is a certain amount of, you talked about this after the movie, Jared, and I think it was a really good point. There's a certain amount of conscious marketing.
Oh, the whole thing was a commercial. It was a constant.
Like, we're going to be about the tough guys facing down scarcity and post-apocalyptic, and we don't need no government and all of that. And I was interested in that as a cultural phenomenon. I wouldn't agree with all of that, but I was interested in that as a cultural phenomenon, but it turned into the same old treacly, gynocentric wishes, feelings over reality, wishes over faith in God.
Maybe I'm being too harsh, but like the work of the devil. Like, this is how you corrupt morality. This is how you corrupt the fight between good and evil, this kind of thing.
It did seem kind of cynical. And it did seem like this is why for me, the novel, The Present, was so important for me to write, was I really wanted to write about men's needs, men's preferences, and male authority, right? I mean, the novel is basically about Oliver having authority in the realm of morality and reality, and Rachel coming around. Rachel submits to, she escapes vanity, she submits to authority. Now, the authority happens to be somewhat personified in Oliver, but I view men, because we generally have to deal more with objective reality than women do. Mm-hmm. And women generally go into professions that are persons and feelings based, nothing wrong with that. But we men are supposed to deliver some of the principles of objective reality to women, and women are supposed to deliver some of the principles of relationships to men. And that's a great exchange, right? I'll bring you objective reality, you bring me a community. Men suck at building community, but women are obviously not quite as objective because they're dealing with the feelings and the people more, right? And again, this is just a trend. It could be 51-49, but it's still a trend. So I think that's a great deal. But all it is about provoking women's unreal psychosis by saying you can act entirely based on vanity and feelings. And the woman who opened the gates, the angel, the sunbeams hitting her, I'm full of love. And it's like, but there's no plan here, right? So it's provoking the vanity of women. And the vanity of women to overcome rules and have men pay the consequences is kind of the story of Adam and Eve, right? Just one rule.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, what can men say when there's a naked woman offering them fruit, right? So men's job is to deliver some aspects of this more empirical reality to women, and women's job is to deliver more the relationships to men, because relationships are what make the world worthwhile. But in order to have relationships, people actually have to survive in reality. Right. So this combination is a really great yin and yang of men and women. And this was just entirely on the female side. Entirely. Like, women can basically kill a guy and never worry about it again. One guy takes direct orders from a military expert and he's traumatized for life.
Yeah.
And the only way he can be saved is with a woman who's completely psycho, giggling about the end of the world in a greenhouse.
And praying for him. She prayed for him.
Yeah. So, but praying is just a wish that men will fix it somehow, right? So this worship of the feelings, this worship of fantasy,
and this elevation of women to, because the women let all the refugees in and then the men figured out how to fix it, right? Which is to say that, well, women just have to have faith, but men actually have to solve the problem. Is it says that men can never disagree with or oppose women's feelings. And that is absolutely, completely, and totally toxic. In the same way, it would be that men can, that women can never, ever oppose men's, quote, objectivity, right? Because men can say quite, we deal with tangible, empirical, material reality, right? So we're friends.
Yes.
Right? Does the friendship exist in tangible, empirical, material reality? No. Yeah. The relationship doesn't exist in reality, right? Yeah. It exists because we're here talking across the table and we like it, chatting and mm-hmm. we enjoy each other's company and we've worked together and all of that and done some great things in the world. But tangible, material, empirical reality, no. Does not exist. So women have to remind us that the stuff that doesn't, quote, exist is really, really important. And we have to remind women that the stuff that does exist is also really important, like math and food and grain and hunting and danger and enemies and murderers and
yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, that this for women to bring the unreal to men is great because that reminds us of the importance of relationships.
Well, that's
for,
like,
for
that's...
men to bring the real to women is also important because then we get to not just be friends but also live.
Yeah.
Because the relationship doesn't exist in the future if we don't have enough food.
So in the movie they do say, and this, you know, Miss My Love Will Heal the World woman says something along the lines of like,
we are the world.
Like, those are some lines from the movie, you know? What'd she say? Oh, yeah. We survive, but we gotta, like, life guy has to be worth living.
Yeah, you know? And that's totally right.
I absolutely agree.
Totally agree.
But it's that message has been so, like, viciously created in this movie. Malicious to it.
For meaning to exist, life has to be sustainable.
Yes.
For life to be meaningful, relationships have to be valuable. I totally get that. And we give the relationships to the women and they give the material objective stuff to us to some degree, right? But we have to respect each other's expertise in this realm. And I'm really, really sick and tired of all of this culture that says all we have to do is worship women and everything will be great. That is corrupt to beyond. And it does. It is demonic and to your point in that it provokes female vanity, that all I have to do is feel and wish and act. And I just have to wait until my husband is shot and that I can do the exact opposite of what he's told us is necessary to survive. That's demonic.
Sorry, this might be too much.
If you want to get your way, get your husband shot.
This might be too much of a tangent, but imagine the power trip if you're this kind of like corporate plastic wrapped Christian woman that you've married God, not in like the virtuous sense, but like you're getting orders from God directly. Like imagine the female power trip.
Oh, it turns women into the mystery religion cultists, right? In that, you know, you can't talk to God, you can only talk to me.
Uh-huh.
And this is why when the woman says, I had faith, and the man says, I believe in you. Right? He's saying, you are the pipeline to all that is true and good. I can't talk to God directly. What if God was telling him to keep the refugees out because he wants the people who prepared to survive, right?
Good grief.
Right? He can't talk to God directly. He can only access God through his wife. And that is absolutely, that's the exact opposite of Christianity.
That's darkness.
Right? Yeah. I mean, what is the Garden of Eden is, well, you access Satan through Eve, right? And so this idea that the women are the holders of the mystery religion and they just have to feel and wish and all men can do is trail after them and make their wishes come true.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely demonic and wretched for the kid.
Angel Studios owes some,
this more than cancels out Sound of Freedom for me.
This is
it's pretty dark and nobody seemed to be.
They've got something to make up for and apologize for, my opinion.
I just, you know, can you imagine that if the woman had been shot and the man disobeyed her and she said, after she woke up and from being shot and she realized that he'd completely betrayed their marriage, said, I worship you.
Right.
If the woman had said to the man, I worship you, after he did something terrible to her while she was shot, and she woke up and said, I worship you. Mm. I mean, that would be considered psycho. That would be like a codependent in the extreme abusive relationship, that he utterly betrayed her while she was shot and dying, and he cared more about the refugees than her. Like, you just sit by your bed and hope your husband lives rather than go out. And so if the woman had been shot and the man had completely betrayed her and then she woke up and said, I just worship you.
Good grief.
That would be psycho. That would be so unhealthy.
He went out and got all the refugees driven away or shot.
Right.
You know, from the gate.
Right.
You know, and then the fences he broke, all the fencing, the non-fenced area around the property, razor wires, you got guard towers, you know, everything else, and everybody's been trained.
Yep.
You know, it's like they went a whole hog into, we're going to make this
this has to be a fortress because, you know, my wife just got shot.
Except that would be slightly, that would be more survivalist, right?
No, so, I get it. Right. But that would be the closest I could think of a betrayal of her in that context.
Right.
Yeah.
If he had betrayed her in the most foundational way, and she, while she was shot, and then she woke up and said, I just worship you.
Yeah.
That would be psycho. She wouldn't be angry. She wouldn't be upset. She would just become, the religion would be him. And that would be, I don't know, some bizarre far-right fascist fantasy of abs and peaked caps. I don't know. Like it's just too strange for words. So, all right. Anything else that we wanted to add at the end?
Well, you know, it's been so much fun tearing this apart. I do appreciate that aspect of it. It's been rather cathartic.
It was costly, man. It was costly. I don't often feel my bladder visibly contract in the course of a movie. I'm like, I mean, I don't often order popcorn, but I would have needed the bag. I felt I needed the bag near the end.
And I think there's something optimistic and celebratory in the fact that, for the moment, the left seems to be taking a big cultural correction. And you've got time and breath to...
Vampires sleep during the day.
I'm with you, but for the moment, we have the time and breath to critique the false right. Or the, you know, the...
It's the woke right. It's just the woke right to me.
This is the joke right.
Yeah,
this is terrible.
Yeah. This was a... So, okay, Happy New Year to everyone, because this is our last show of 2024. We're ringing it out with a testosterone-laced ranty bang. So that's excellent. And we will, of course, see everyone on the flip side of the new year. And thank you, everyone, for next year is going to be the 20th year.
Yeah.
No.
Next year, because I first published in 2005. On Lou Rockwell. Lou Rockwell was my very first. It was the Stateless Society, an examination of alternatives. It was my first essay, and it was 2005. So next year is 20 years of pure, unbridled, straight-to-the-veins philosophy with only a few minor holdbacks. So, yes, it has been an incredible ride. We've got a lot to celebrate next year. Still... north of the grave is always a good thing. So,
hey.
Yeah, have yourself a wonderful new year. If you'd like to help out the show, of course, freedomain.com/donate. You may consider that rather than a subscription to... Never mind. That's the... Yeah. Anyway, so freedomain.com/donate. Thanks, everyone, so much. Sorry, Izzy. Just, is there anything... So, Izzy, sorry, just as we end up here...
Oh, I heard you guys for the last half hour, so...
So, Izzy, we did give you a great sorrow as to why, one, come sit here. We did give you a great sorrow as to why you weren't part of the movie review. No, sit here.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Right, yeah. So is there, you had some thoughts, I think, if I remember right.
Yeah. So I walked out, basically. No, actually, I took a very slow walk out because I did not want to take my, I wanted to take my time. So I did a very evil thing. I snuck a drink into the theater and no one noticed. It's all I'm going to say. But I drank the drink, and I had to use the bathroom, so
yeah,
I left.
Izzy's like, I need to go to the bathroom. Now, I'm like, yeah, right.
This was a huge theater. Like, genuinely, there were so many different, like, venues or whatever the heck they're called where you could see the movies, like, the actual theaters. So it's a big building. There were, like, four different bathrooms. I went to the one at the entrance, and we were at the very end, like, the opposite end, because I was like, let me out.
So, the joke I made earlier was the movie was about people fleeing a bomb, and then you actually acted out the movie by fleeing a bomb.
I literally did. And I'm, like, standing after I wash my hands and everything, I'm just standing there, and I'm like, oh, do I have to go back? So, I go back, and I'm like, look, what if I'm being rude, and I have to, like, what if everyone else likes the movie, and I'm just being rude?
And you've never walked out of a movie before.
I wanted to.
Oh, yeah. But you never have, actually have.
I think you're right.
You're normally fairly patient?
No, I'm not.
No. In terms of, like, you will stick it out.
I will stick it out because, again, the thing is, like, if everyone else likes it, I don't want to be the rude one who just leaves.
Spoils it for everyone.
Yeah, so I was just, like, I was really thinking that I'm like, nah, this is really bad. So I walk and I'm like, can I leave? And you're like, yeah.
Yeah, go.
I'm like, okay. So out I go.
No, and also, I mean, I was still at the point where I thought the movie was redeemable.
I didn't.
So tell me, when did you first start to feel alarmed?
Beginning.
No, what did you talk about?
No, literally beginning.
Like what?
First scene. It was like right...
The kids. There's a girl trying to plan a date in the hallway.
That is not the first scene.
No, what was the first scene? Oh, no, the first scene was the South Americans or whatever with the bomb, right?
Because it was like, nothing made sense. How did you even get that? Huh. And like, look, I don't mean, obviously I was like, okay, you know what? Maybe this will get explained. I just had a gut feeling none of it was going to get explained. Maybe it did sometime after I left. I don't know. I just didn't think it was going to happen. And then after, when she was trying to plan a date, I thought it was too cliched. Like, the video game, the shallow girl, the TV addict, and then the fitness mom with her greens. And maybe that was supposed to be a joke, but this was not a comedy movie. It's a apocalyptic movie with like nuclear weapons and war, and it's not supposed to be funny, and it's not supposed to be a bunch of cliches. Now, I could have seen it being an interesting story arc if they gave all the cliched characters their own story arc or character arc with like the bomb, and they took all these kind of annoying stereotypes and turned them into like someone with depth when they all had to go into like the shelters or whatever, the homestead, right? That could have been interesting. Personally, I didn't see it happening. I also didn't
Neither
think
did we.
Any of the actors were any good.
You really hated the acting in this.
Hated the acting in this.
Mm. Oh, do you know what it was that you hated this?
They genuinely did not. Nothing felt real. I think a big problem for me is when they do music, too much music takes away from the acting.
Mm.
It's like,
you're subbing the music for the feeling.
Yeah. And there's no feel. We're sitting here, there's no dramatic cinema movie. Dot, dot, dot. Like, no, there isn't. We're just here yapping.
Like the gopher turning. Dun, dun, dun.
It's like in a lot of horror movies, they'll kill it all, or they'll kill all the suspense by putting in music.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not creepy. You know what conveys a lot more than music, in my opinion, is silence.
Yeah.
Because I think silence, it relies upon the atmosphere and the characters to make the emotion, not just sad piano or happy violin or whatever, right?
Right, right.
So that was my big problem. And then after that, I was like, felt like a lot of cliches, just like, here's a bunch of far right dudes who are chads and super manly mans.
No, and the problem with you is that that's you. I mean, other than the far right stuff, like that's your lived experience.
No,
with Jared and James and I, it's just the manly soldier of fortune.
No, it's just they all felt like watching some debate on Twitter, and like it's one of those talk shows where they're all kind of annoying, and like all the people who are like, yeah, I'm a Chad, but not like Andrew Tate, who can be kind of funny, but also not great at the same time. But like. The people who are trying to be cheap copies of guys like him or whatever, or who are all like, I don't know. It's a type
of... I'm going to order my son to shoot a guy and never talk about it with him again.
No, but it's just... Oh, is that another thing?
Did it feel like... You never see like how when a leftist makes a meme of a gun or an image of a gun and they completely don't understand how guns work and like the entire bullet is coming out of the chamber? It's like that. It's like they're caricatures of people they really don't understand.
This felt like they were all caricatures of just a bunch of those like Republican dudes on Twitter.
There was another thread of threads that were raised and not followed, and maybe it shows up in the series. I was kind of surprised that it basically was a preview for a series.
Hey guys, it's really important that no one pulls out their phone in a theater, as we're going to be told 20 times halfway through the previews, but please pull out your phone and scan the QR code. Yeah. I didn't actually see that. I was reading about it online, but
so there's this guy named Christian. Now if there's a movie about Christians, and there's a guy named Christian, I'm going to expect layers of whatever, right? Analogies and metaphors. So there's this, he's kind of a preppy looking dude.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the creepy guy?
Yeah, the creepy guy, right? You were still, I think this is, you were just despawning, I think at this point, disintegrating. Slowly.
I was there when he let the government agent in, which was like, that was dumb.
So, oh, you're right.
Did you guys not talk about this?
There's so much to cover, but yeah, we can talk about this.
So
you know what? Here, I'm going to cover it all. Trash. Don't watch it. Trash. All right, we're done.
So, yeah, because we didn't even know if he was a government agent. He was just some guy coming in to threaten like crazy, right? No paperwork, no data, no. He's just some guy coming in and threatening them, right?
Why is this assistant kid letting him into the house, letting him into the property? Like, what?
Don't know, because he claims to be authority, right? And that was an interesting question. What is authority?
Who pays my check is the authority for them? Like, in any real world.
In this kind of situation, the authority is the people who have the guns.
Well, that's generally true in most situations. I mean, but hang on, so the guy who's Christian, the preppy-looking creepy dude, right?
So I thought this was going to be a whole Judas story time. Mm. Although why you'd call the Judas Christian is not right. Because he comes in and he's like weirdly fondling the ammo in the back of the...
I honestly wasn't looking for that. I think I was on my phone. But
yes, and you were saying, when can I leave?
Yeah, I was so, just like venting.
No, so he was in there and he was like half like caressing the weaponry or the
bullet.
Out of an odd concern, it's like, what is all this?
Right, right. And then the soldier guy is like, you got a problem or is there anything wrong? Or he's like, no, I'm just oily guy. I'm just slippery dude, right? This creepy guy is like fondling all the ammo and then he never shows up again in the rest of the movie. I don't understand what this was all about.
No, Dad, that's for the series.
You're right. Oh, there was so much of it was just a plastic product. Oh my God.
They just wanted a series.
Very exciting. All right. Now, is there anything else that anyone wants to add?
I just want to mention that I'm pretty sure I've heard you guys try to end the show like 3 or 4 times.
It often happens. It happens in my own mind. My live streams are only planned to be 3 minutes.
Everything. And then, and then there's this. No, okay.
Yeah.
It's one of my stories, except this will in fact end.
So the whole, worship woman thing was sort of previewed with the hug and betrayal with the guy. And we just sort of mentioned this earlier, but where the military guy who ordered his son to take the shot never talks to his very, very green son about having just killed a man.
Yep. I mean, he says, it changes a man.
Yeah. I'm not gonna talk to him.
Like I changed his nappies.
This is the same old Hollywood trope that men are incompetent, emotional.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Sorry.
Yeah. And then he's like, he goes to the girl, magical heart transplant girl. He's like, I can't talk to my parents. Can I talk to you? And then it's like, I'll pray for you. And then just through her girly giggles and smiles that he just sort of feels a little better.
I can't talk to my parents. I can only come to the really attractive girl in the middle of the night and cry. Because that's
who
really attractive.
I've met once.
Oh, come on, man. I mean, like, that's a move. I mean, come on.
Of course.
And of course, in the highly Christian community, the two young people
the
being out
girl
all
is like,
night.
Come on into my bedroom at night.
Yes, come.
In her room?
Yeah. Come sit on my bed.
Yes.
In the middle of the night, you hunkosaurus of weepiness. So the fact that they're out all night, nobody has any problem with it at all. Anyway.
Well, the dad has a problem with it a little bit later.
But no, the thing is, no one's checking up. There's no chaperone. Like, how does she disappear?
Yeah, well, so the man has a problem because he's like, I don't know if the Soldier of Fortune guy is going to work out in the community. Huh. I don't even know what that means. Huh. Well, he hired the guy to protect him. The guy's doing a great job of protecting him. It turns out they do need protecting. But he's like, I don't know if we're going to need this protection that I hired and that it's pretty effective and that we totally need. I don't know. So I didn't know what that made sense. I didn't know if that made any sense at all.
Yeah,
what sense that made.
The movie is hard to cover because there's so many things that are just, set up without payoff.
There's nothing good about it. Like, that's the way we cover it.
No, there is something good about it, which is this show, which if we go a little longer, it's almost the length of the movie.
Something good about it is that it ended.
No, I'm like,
the movie or this show?
Yeah.
It was so cathartic to tear this thing apart. And look, there's a lot of cultural stuff in here that needed to be corrected. That these are not the first people that have made this mistake. Like, if you want to make a non-leftist movie, not even right wing, if you want to make a non-leftist movie, here's what you need to do. If you want to be authentic with this, anytime you're afraid, if I do this, I'm going to be called this word, ignore that. Mm-hmm. If you're afraid of being called the word, ignore it. Ignore that impulse and create the movie you want to create.
Yep.
Oh, just
that would be art.
Just show women having an equivalent respect for men that men have for women. That's revolutionary. Mm. Like that to me would be traditional. At least ask for mutual respect. Now, in traditional Christianity, the man is the head of the household, so he's supposed to get more respect. But just make it equal, and that's just going to be. Oh, have the women be wrong? What were the women wrong about? Was any woman wrong about anything in this movie? That to me is the wildest thing.
Well, if she was corrected or helped by another woman.
Okay, what's an example?
Like the mom, like she's trying to call, like, okay, so there's these super ultra mega prepper people who got infinite resources, ostensibly.
Apparently.
But their daughter who's in...
Their
daughter who's in another state. Now, she did have a SEAL escort, but her daughter who's in another state didn't have a satellite phone.
Right.
But super wise, military army woman knows how to, get on.
Right, the satellite
she's
phone.
She's got a satellite phone, and we can get it. Oh, thank you so much. We got there.
So super perfect guy.
Wonderful woman moment.
And then the daughters were never.
Yeah, but she wasn't wrong. She just needed help. In what
fair.
In what was
the woman wrong and was corrected by a male. This does not exist in art anymore, except in my novel, The Present. freedomain.com/books. No, in what is a woman wrong who is corrected by a male?
In that movie.
What is a woman wrong where she's even corrected by a woman? Not wrong like I need some help contacting my daughter. That's just a technical thing, right?
No.
In what has a woman made a significant mistake and is corrected by anyone? Can women be corrected or be wrong?
I picked the wrong nail polish color and was corrected by another woman.
Or a gay man. It's often hard to say.
Hard to tell nowadays. Right.
No, that's too revolutionary for words. Because, you know, this trope in the commercials, the women are always wise and smart and the men are always idiots, right? Like, this appeal to female vanity is completely pathological. And it makes women unbearable in relationships because they can't conceive of being incorrect about anything, which means you really can't have much impact on them.
Right. Right.
It's just a one-way street of a gynocentric enslavement to absolute perfection and the God-called woman that you have to worship and can't contradict. I think it makes women progressive because as this appeal to female vanity has increased over the last 50 or 60 years, women have got progressively more and more and more unhappy because vanity and megalomania and narcissistic perfection is not a state of happiness. It's not a state of able to be loved. Yeah. It's a state of offering commands and getting enraged at anyone who disagrees with you, which is kind of where culture is. And it just makes a man who is endlessly praised and deferred to goes crazy. It's actually sabotage and an assault upon femininity to make them always perfect and always right and can't be contradicted. It is growing a truly demonic seed of vanity and isolation, right? Because we correct each other all the time, right? I mean, that's part of being in relationships, right? And if you're immune to that, you can't be in a relationship and you can't be happy. You can't be loved. And taking away relationships from women in particular by appealing to their vanity and the sense of being perfect takes away from women what they generally treasure the most, which is connection and relationships. Take relationships away from men, we still have technology.
Hmm. we still have things.
We have TVs. Yeah. I still have a smart market. But no, I mean, it's bad to take it away from men, but it's, I think, slightly worse, even more so, to take it away from women, because women live to connect and to be in relationships and to be in love. And that's really, really important for men and for women, a little bit more important for women. Taking that away through vanity is just absolutely sabotaging women's happiness. And we can see this in the data. Mm. Women are more and more unhappy, have more and more mental illnesses, more and more antidepressant addiction and so on. And right. I mean, being in a relationship is the best way for women to be happy, and provoking their vanity makes them impossible to relate to. So, all right. I think we're done.
Fifth time.
Come on, let's be kind. I think it's at least eighth.
Oh.
No, don't tease us now. All right, anything else? Last, going once, going twice.
Final word, don't give them your money.
Yeah.
Don't give these people your money.
Yep. Yeah, trust us.
Don't go see it.
Well, and I pulled, like, I'm waiting for some kind of response apology from the studio, which won't happen, but yeah, that's...
You're the skeleton meme at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
It means that nobody...
They've lost credit.
It means that, because you think of the number of people who have to sign off on a movie.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie probably tens of millions of dollars.
You know how much that hurts? Like, this went through like 100 people and at least 100 people. And not to mention all the actors, and not a single one was like, guys, this sucks.
Right. And the reason, this is to your point, Jared, being called a name. So if they put a scene in where a man was wrong and corrected by a woman, nobody has a problem. If they put in a scene in where a woman is wrong and corrected by a man, that's so misogynistic. Are you saying that women need men in order to, like, mm-hmm. So they're still just running away from the misogyny label, which means it's not real art. Real art has to be willing to risk offense. It has to be willing to shock people.
And I understand not sacrificing yourself. You could have been a lot edgier than this, you know?
We're going to get to that eighth time.
You know what? If we keep this going, we can make this a show that lasts an entire year.
You know what? I'm going to do that.
2025, Free Domain Forever.
Wait, Izzy's getting closer to the phone.
I'm getting closer to the phone.
What's happening? FreeDomain.com/donate. Like, share, and subscribe.